Welcome to the Sons of Liberty podcast, coming to you from the Liberty Tree Studio in San Antonio, Texas, where we discuss topics of the day, firearms, great food, and even better whiskey. Grab a drink, sit down with your host, the founding daddies, Mike Mahalski and Kyle Grothus.
Howdy, guys. Welcome to the SLGW podcast with Mike and Kyle. And today we are doing audience questions. We had put out a little while ago for people to post questions online for us to answer. And we're going to answer as many of them as we can.
Yeah, what's going on? This is my my second time at the podcast, right? You did one recently.
We did one yesterday with Justin Melnick, and we'll see which one comes out first. We'll probably put them out here soon. But went really well, man. We talked about aliens, 80s video games, acting, all sorts of crazy stuff. It was fun.
I like this. I like the audience question stuff. We should do this more.
Should be a month. We'll do it. Make it a monthly thing.
Yeah, for sure. So, guys, after y'all see this, if there's any questions that we missed, feel free to, in the comments, you know, ask any questions that you'd like us to answer. Because as far as I'm concerned, you could ask us anything, and we'll
try to answer it.
All right, first question here: can we tour the facility? I live not far from you guys, and I haven't had a chance to go. This is from Watchdog. I personally don't care. I mean, the cool thing about Sons of Liberty, whenever we originally started, was we built it as a like a culture. It wasn't, you know, we didn't want to just be a store. We wanted to have you know, it'd be like a cool environment. And the way things used to be before we got super busy, you know, we've always had a bar in the shop. So our very first shop, we had a, like the very first thing before we ever had a workbench, we actually had a bar. And it was cool because you never knew who was going to show up. I mean, if you came to stop by Sons Liberty, there could be, you know, musicians or athletes or, you know, some special team, you know, rolling through town. And it was a cool hangout. It was a cool environment. As we started getting busier and busier, we had to kind of scale that down because it was getting harder and harder to meet demand. But we have a bar here at our new facility. It's outside. It's called the Green Dragon South. And what I would encourage people to do, if you do want to come visit, set it up in advance. Give me, you know, reach out to me on social. I'm like the easiest guy in the industry to get a hold of. Reach out to me and like set it up in advance. You know, that's probably the best way to come do that. So, you know, just make sure we're not, you know, slammed with something. We want to make sure if you make some long ass pilgrimage to get here that we can actually show you a good time.
Yeah, guys, you're always welcome to come by and stop by the bar. But like Mike said, you know, heads up is always good. You know, shop tours can be a little harder depending on what we got going on inside, but we just added AC to the bar. It's pretty comfortable. We got, you know, we got beer on tap. We always got Shiner and rotating tap. We got liquor. We got all sorts of stuff. So soon to be our own liquor. You know, that's coming here in the next few weeks. Finally.
So it's finally coming.
Yeah. We're just waiting on, we got the bottles. We got the juice. We're just waiting on the labels to come in. We're ready to rock and roll.
You're kind of a whiskey snob. Like, no shit. Is it good?
Yeah, it's actually really good. I've given it to a bunch of guys that really know their shit, and everybody really likes it actually. So yeah it's going to be like a two and a half year in the barrel, you know, aged whiskey, and we did a sherry finish on it. It actually came out really good. It's easy to drink, especially a little ice. It's really good.
Wow. All right. So is a Sun's range an idea, something y'all would entertain? That's actually a really, really good question. So our current facility, we outgrew the facility that we're in before we ever moved in, which was something that was, you know, impossible to anticipate. And we had outgrown this place before we ever moved in. We are in the process of looking to build or buy a new facility. And the idea of a range is something we've thought of. I mean, it makes it a lot easier. Whenever we have to send guys to go test fire hundreds and hundreds of bolt carrier groups every single week, they're having to drive across town to one of our partner facilities like RDI or Lone Star. And that's logistically hard to send, you know, five armorers out to just shoot BCGs all day. It would be nice to be able to walk out the back door and do that. So that's something we're definitely looking at right now. I mean, you know, I'm not going to get into the whole real estate stuff, but I mean, right now, like, it's a tough time to buy or build. I mean, it's just most people aren't buying or building shit right now.
I'll take the next question. So here I'm here for the real questions. Basil or Elijah Craig Barrel Proof from Will Strunk. Currently, I'm drinking Basil Hayden's actually because I saw the question, so that's what I picked out of the bar behind me. I like them both, but honestly, Basil Hayden's is just really easy to drink. Especially one of my favorites is their dark rye is really good. And it's always one of those things, like if I got to go to a party or something and I just got to go stop by the liquor store and grab something that I think everybody will like. Basil Hayden is always a really good choice. I remember Bo Talso Plato did that, those barrel pick.
Yeah.
Elijah Craig a while back, and that was actually really good too. I think I still have that bottle, actually. It's almost done, but it's still there.
Yeah, I have no input on that. Whenever I was drinking, I drank vodka out of a plastic bottle. I'm not your guy on that one. All right, in a hot dog eating contest between Mike and Kyle, who would win? This is from Dissentist. I would win.
Probably, yeah.
Years of practice.
Lots of wieners.
Lots of wieners, yeah.
You know, it's funny. I don't know if y'all have seen on Forward Control's design, there's like, that's like the current fight they're having is on hot dog toppings. Have you seen that?
No.
In Roger's group? Yeah. It's like hot ketchup versus mustard versus whatever the hell else. Personally, I like both, but I prefer mustard.
Mustard, yeah. I can't. Ketchup on a hot dog is just no good.
It depends on the quality of the hot dog. If it's a shitty hot dog, I'll put ketchup on it. But
have you seen the guys that win those contests that eat like 70 or 80 hot
dogs?
They're
tiny. They're skinny little dudes. They're like weird.
140 pounds, man. I don't understand. There's something. There's a portal to another dimension somewhere inside their fucking stomach.
Just sitting on a bucket and they're coming right out the other end.
Exactly. Yeah, guys. Yeah. All right. Will the olive hat be available for Father's Day? Well, next year. Next year, we promise it will be.
Waited a little long to shoot this one, I guess. Father's Day is a couple weeks ago. Whoops.
It will be. That's Flonga. And yeah, man, I'll tell you what, Flonga, if you see this message, if you see this podcast, hit me up, man, and I will send you one. I will personally send you one for us sucking at our scheduling.
All right, can I come and watch a show in person, drink some whiskey, and smoke cigar? I'm from San Antonio on the south side, and I respect all you guys are doing. From 33 Juice. Yeah, I mean, you can't really watch a show because, honestly, you can't see the rest of this room, but it's basically a closet.
Yeah, we're in a janitor's closet right now. As a matter of fact, the janitor's angry that we're taking up his
He can't space. Mop.
He yeah. can't mop, yeah.
Just but, mostly this table and wires and cameras, and that's pretty much all that's in here. So
For now, right? But I'll tell you what, Mr. Juice, if you want to come by and hang out and meet everybody and smoke cigars and have a drink, man, hit us up and let us know you want to come by and we'll schedule something. Again, it's really important to us that we never lose
touch with everybody.
Yeah, never lose touch with the whole idea of this, of Sons Liberty being a culture and an idea and like-minded people and like kind of a community. So, yes. Hit us up and come on by and smoke some cigars. We'd love that.
Yeah, we got a humidor at the bar, so there's cigars. There's plenty of whiskey of all different sorts. So you're welcome to, you know, donate some to the cause while you're at it, too.
Yeah.
So we'll always let you in if you bring alcohol. So.
All right, industry-related question. In the time y'all been consistently putting out some of the highest quality duty and performance rifles, a lot of other names have come and gone by the wayside, usually because they lose their way or attach to too much of a concept or character that ends up self-destruction and taking those brands down several notches, not completely. What is that you've done between Mike Mahalski and Kyle Grothews, or Kyle SOGW, that have helped you avoid common traps and pitfalls that seem to bring down so many and still maintain your core principles and maintain your community? A community I've only seen great support from y'all and heard gratitude from those who've received.
You get the award for longest question, by the way.
Received it over the years, including myself. Appreciate you guys. Stay true to who you are and what you do. Podcasts are tricky. It's important to engage your audience for sure, but it can be difficult to balance being real and speaking candidly, where nearly everything you say will be soundbite for those who want to see you fail. That's true. And I don't just mean anti-gun folks. The ones who cry the loudest for your head on the platter are the ones who demand that you be hardcore about everything that they project onto your brand. You know what, dude? You know who this is?
Who?
This is fucking Cat Shannon.
I see the cat. That's what I figured I was thinking.
Hey, that's a great question. I'm not surprised it came from our old friend Cat Shannon. Cat's a really old dear friend of mine. I've been friends with him since way before Sons Liberty. Cat was a Marine and several deployments. Really good, really good guy. So yeah, I'll go ahead and answer this question, or we'll both answer this question, but I'll take a whack at it. So I think one of the things that we do well, right, it's like none of us came from the industry. Like Kyle was not an industry guy. Kyle owned a lumber business. I was in skydiving. I used to travel around playing poker or shooting pool to eat. None of us came from the industry. And believe it or not, the majority of our team did not come from the industry, right? So one of the things I think we've done that's helped a lot is we're kind of industry outsiders. We don't get involved in industry drama. We don't really attach ourselves to anybody in particular. We don't let anybody attach themselves to us. We just kind of want to do our thing, right? And our thing is making hardcore, you know, hard use rifles. And we also have a message about, you know, we stay pretty on topic. Whenever we do delve into the conversation of politics, it's usually within the Second Amendment. Yeah, we both have really strong feelings about a wide variety of political topics. But as a brand, as a company, I really don't, at least not on behalf of the brand. I mean, on my personal social media, yeah. I delve into quite a bit of stuff. But on our company social media, I try to stick to the Second Amendment issue because, you know, that's where our area of expertise is. That's where we're constantly in the trenches. We're, you know, having to deal with all of these crazy rule changes and the ATF and then just, you know, the constant push to try to put us out of business. But I think if you just stick to your core of what you're good at, make high quality rifles, avoid drama, and take care of your end users, that's a pretty good recipe to just not fuck stuff up.
Yeah, I agree. You know, we definitely try to stay out of politics. Like Mike said, you know, I run other businesses and, you know, we don't get into politics at all when it comes to lumber because, I mean, everybody's got a different opinion. We try to stick to 2A, you know, try not to get too tied in with different personalities. You know, obviously we have pro staff and stuff, but we try to keep it about the guns, try to keep it about the product. And I think that's the, you know, we can all agree on 2A, but, you know, there's not a lot of agreement necessarily on everything else. So,
well, and like I said, I mean, I have my personal social media and I have my personal stuff, you know, where I like to talk about some of this stuff. I mean, I'm a huge current events junkie. I like, you know, discussing the current situation in the country, whatever that is. So I'm not afraid to do that. But, you know, as Mike Mahalski, not necessarily as, you know, Sons of Liberty, there was another part to this question here that I think is really valid. And it's, you know, you're right, Kat. It's not the anti-gun folks that we get a lot of the hate mail from. It's from people within the gun. First of all, I don't think there's a such thing as a gun community. I think there's a gun culture, but I don't think there's really a community. Okay. And we do get a lot of shit from there for people trying to project whatever idea they want onto the brand. If we were to fail, I could live with failing, following my core beliefs, our core beliefs, the things that Kyle and I believe in, and we make decisions based upon what we actually believe. I'm not influenced by an anonymous comment on Instagram, and we're swayed by, you know, there are people that think like, oh, that Soul Snatcher lower is in bad taste. Y'all should discontinue it. Okay, well, I like it. A lot of our customers like it. I'm going to go ahead and roll with it because, you know, this. Or they say, hey, you know, you've dealt with you know, police departments. Or, you know, you deal with police departments, you know, and I'm like, well, because I believe in a constitutional republic, and I think that, you know, society is better off with law enforcement. That's my belief. If people don't like that or they don't, well, you know, I'm not going to abandon my core beliefs because of some angry anonymous person on the internet. That's the beauty of capitalism. There's a lot of other gun companies out there. You choose the one that you think is most in line with your core. I will tell you, you're going to have a hard time finding a company that you agree with on everything. So that's my answer, Kat. Good question.
Great question. I think the next one's kind of in the same vein. What is the biggest threat to the gun community, gun industry, and nation? All separate questions. I mean, I think part of the biggest threat to the gun community is eating our own. You know, there's a lot of infighting. You know, we tend to attack newbies that may not know what they're talking about, but you know, I think that's one thing me and Mike, when we first started, we educated people, and we still do, about, you know, the M4 platform and a lot of different things. You know, Mike teaches a lot of armors classes and that sort of stuff. And educating people is important, and stomping on them because they don't know what they're talking about is bad.
Yeah, I'll take a whack at this. So, again, I don't necessarily think that there's a gun community. I think that there's a gun culture. And I want to make sure that I'm explaining what I mean by that. You know, there are a lot of people that really believe in the Second Amendment. They believe in, you know, the right to self-defense and unfiltered and unapologetically purist for the Second Amendment. And you might find two people who agree on 95% of their worldview, but the 5% that they disagree on, they might be willing to shoot each other over. And that's so. When it comes to what is the biggest threat to the gun community, I would say that, you know, you have the gun community is actually, I think, made up, or the what we call the community, is made up of individuals. The thing that separates us, like the Second Amendment supporters from people who are anti-gun, I think the anti-gun people believe in the collective, and they put the emphasis on the collective, and everything's about, you know, groupthink. In the Second Amendment culture, okay, it's highly individualistic people, and we believe strongly in individual rights. We believe that the individual right trumps the collective. So because you have a bunch of people that are highly individualistic, you're going to have very opinionated people who, like I said, might agree on 95% of things, but the 5% thing that you're different on may make you sworn enemies. So that, to me, is the threat to the community, if there ever was one. We don't really organize well. Now, a separate question, what is the biggest threat to the gun industry? The biggest threat to the gun industry, in my opinion, is not legislation, at least not right now. Okay, I think in at least 10, maybe 10 years or more, I don't think that you're going to be able to see legislation happen like with an assault weapons ban or a magazine ban. It's just gun control has never been less popular than it is today. Let me say that again. Gun control has never been less popular than it is today. All through COVID, through the pandemic, through the social unrest after the George Floyd situation, all that kind of stuff, more people bought guns than ever before, and people who had never owned a gun bought guns, and the demographic of gun ownership has changed forever. I'm not saying that they become Second Amendment allies. What I am saying, though, is a lot of people are less enthusiastic about opposing gun ownership than ever before. Okay, so that's, I don't worry about legislation. What I do worry about, okay, is like banking, a centralized digital currency, ESG scores, insurance. If it becomes hard to transact because, you know, you have some centralized, you know, digital currency, then, you know, if somebody controls your ability to transact, that could be a big deal. Or if, you know, if insurance companies were to stop insuring you or become so cost prohibitive that gun manufacturers couldn't do it. That's the stuff that scares me. It's more from the private side. The private side is the stuff that that concerns me. And unfortunately, there's such a strong relationship between certain government actors and banking. Or
yeah, they've learned to hit us from that end. You know, it's at least once a week. You know, I have someone come do some work at the house, and they're like, "Oh, can you Venmo me?" And I'm like, "No, bro, I've been banned for years PayPal, Venmo." I mean, I think they got your girlfriend at the time. Like, they came after all of us at one point, and you know, thank God they're still. I'm not going to mention their names. I'm going to get banned on those too, but I still have a few ways to send currency digitally. But
that's right. So Kyle Venmo'd one of our teammates money for a scope mount.
Yeah,
right?
Simple and easy.
And he got shut down, and because we had the same email suffix, I got shut down, and then immediately because my girlfriend and I live at the same address, her account got shut down. And then my mom, my mom's account, who she's never transacted, a gun thing. We all got shut down within like 24 hours. And I mean, and this is our personal accounts. This isn't business. This isn't like our business accounts. Like, these are our personal accounts. I still can never open I can't open an account at Chase Bank. Mm-hmm. And for social people realize, if y'all don't know the difficulty of being in the gun industry, right? Chase Bank, Bank of America, you know, Wells Fargo, a lot of these places, they will not allow a gun company to open an account.
Yeah, it's we're very limited.
Salesforce, Shopify, mm-hmm. Square, even some of the QuickBooks invoicing, right?
Yeah, we can't take credit card payments on QuickBooks.
The majority of credit card processors.
Yeah, we have to use. There's only about two or three credit card processors in the industry that we can use. There's only at one point for gun manufacturers, there was only one insurance company we could use.
Only one insurance company for a gun manufacturer. So when I worry about what the biggest threat to the industry is, it's by far the private sector. You know, getting too into this ESG shit and. You know, us getting choked out, our ability to transact, our ability to conduct business. I mean, like, we seriously talked about when they were putting those unique codes for credit cards, we talked about the idea of Bitcoin or something if we had to, right? And it's just so volatile. It's kind of hard to run a business on, you know, on something like that. But yeah, anyways, that's the biggest threat. And as far as to the nation, man, that's a whole other podcast.
We're going to write that down. We're just going to do a whole podcast on that. Yeah. It's going to be a long one.
Well, Faye, listen, that was the Gun Collective. And by the way, the Gun Collective is a huge supporter. They do amazing stuff. I love watching their channel. Matter of fact, the Gun Collective was actually one of my favorite Pro 2A channels in all of Instagram. So, guys, if you don't follow the Gun Collective, I highly suggest you do.
Future podcast guest, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, they're awesome. Thoughts on industry shadiness and transparency. Also, every guest cigar and whiskey pairing, por favor. Sour Clemens, good guy. You want to take this or you?
Man, on the shady mess, opening up a can of worms. I mean, it's something, you know.
I don't mind.
I was going to say, you know, I was going to start with, you know, one thing, not so much the other side of the coin, is we've always been real honest about specs and transparent on everything we possibly could have been. You know, we've always said from the beginning, it's not what people tell you, it's what they don't. And, you know, there's a lot of gun companies out there that don't tell you everything or purposely leave stuff out because they don't want you to know. And, you know, we've always been trying to be real, real transparent about everything we do as much as we can. As for guest cigar and whiskey pairing, I'll make it a point to talk about what I'm drinking. Like I said, this is Basil Hayden's, and this is the,
This is Kirkland's finest water.
This is the red wine cask finish, which is pretty good, actually. That's my one knock on Basil Hayden's. They've kind of gone off into the woods and some weird stuff, you know, the toasted and the port finish and... But this one's actually pretty damn good. I'll give it that.
So I care less. I think Kyle was very diplomatic. I'll answer the industry shadiness and transparency. There are a lot of companies out there that are completely full of shit on their specs, and they're so full of shit that there was one company that actually copied and pasted our entire product description for a bolt carrier group to include like the Rebellious Stripes laser, and they actually listed on that Rebellious Stripes. And because we found them, we were able to catch typos. They actually copied and pasted like two of our typos. Like, I don't know who wrote that, but someone misspelled something. And I'm like, wow, you didn't even bother to fucking spell check the shit you stole from us. So, like, I mean, I would say that is shady. As far as the shadiness on some of that stuff, one of the things I teach in the Armorer's class is learn how to read a product description. And like Kyle was saying, pay attention to what a company tells you, but pay attention to also what they omit. Like, if they don't list something, it's for a reason. If there's ambiguity in the description, it's usually for a reason. The other thing too, that is a lot of people like, oh, Sons Liberty, they don't manufacture anything. Sons Liberty doesn't make anything. That's not true. Like, almost at this point, most of the entire gun, you know, exists because we told it to, right? I mean, you know, we work with engineers who design stuff, and then we take it to a machine house who makes it. Like a Knox, for example. Like, a Knox exists because our engineers designed it and we have it made. Now, is the machine under this roof? No, but is it something we slapped our brand? No, that's our intellectual property. You know, whenever we do a partnership with like Icon or something on rails, like that is all of our input going into the system, and like it exists because we, you know, we make it exist. Like dimensional specs for how we do stuff on oversizing lugs or undersizing threaded boards, all that kind of, like, you're not just slapping your logo on the side of something. You, at our level, you have to remember, we control like the majority of the machine capacity at almost every company we work with, right? So we're telling them exactly how to make stuff. And by the way, knowing where something is made is about 10 fucking percent of knowing what you have, because every company that might work with that OEM, okay, might have very, very different engineering drawings, very, very different specs, very different, you know, QC expectations, and very different whatever, so on and so forth. So just because you know where something is made does not has nothing to do necessarily with what it is. Like, there's 10% of the question is that, what shop did it come from? The other 90% is materials, tolerances, testing, you know, certain features. And like, the average consumer doesn't know what the fuck they're looking at. If you were to put two identical bolt carrier groups or two bolt carrier groups side by side on a table and ask them to go through there and spot the differences, I guarantee you 9 out of 10 consumers of the AR would have no idea what to look for. Now, you come up to me or, you know, Chad Albert or, you know, a lot of guys from this industry and like from across the room, I can tell you where every single one of those pieces comes from. The last thing I'll say about transparency, I think a lot of people would be shocked if they knew where a lot of the stuff in all of people's favorite brands were actually made. Before Sons Liberty became a fucking household brand, we serviced rifles, thousands and thousands of rifles from every manufacturer you can think of. And we got a long look behind the curtain. And I can tell you right now, people would be shocked if they knew who made what for who. Like, we were just open and transparent about it. And we explained the why. So I hope that answers your question. That's the Pew Pew Jew. Oh, wait, sorry. That was Sour Clemens. Pew Pew Jew's the next one, man. Yehudi's a good guy.
Yes, we do need to bring him on the podcast.
We're going to be sponsoring a couple of pages in his new book, by the way. That's awesome. I'm very excited for that. Oh, I'm coming down to be a guest. We really should. So the Pew Pew Jew, really good guy. His name is Yehuda Rumer, and he's been a friend of ours for a long time. He actually used to write for Ben Shapiro.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good dude. How do you develop the anti-kilt in the street technology for your rifles? Ambrosia Terrebonne. Well, Ambrosia, like, you know, we focus on the fundamentals, you know. We need to have you on the podcast, actually. And
that would be a classic one right there, actually.
Yeah. All right. Fictional Civil War. Avoiding the dissident label. How would the states be divided in which waterway acquisitions, the Mississippi, Rio Grande, most valuable in that assessment for use of a sand, for sand table usage? LZ. Well, I, like, this is outside of my realm. You know, I tell you what, though, I will be the camp's armorer. I'll make sure that all the weapons on this side of Mississippi are running, okay?
I was not prepared for this question. Yet. Yeah, I had to read a couple books on this one.
Yeah, we'll get back to you. Out of measure, we'll find some strategist and have him on. How about that?
Hey, there you go.
Yeah. Will there ever be an SOLGW AK-47 by Captain Texas?
Should we talk about that? Yeah. What almost was? So yeah, at one point we actually almost did this. You know, we
came one signature away, from building AK-47s, and I'm proud to say, like, the guy that we were going to work with is, in my opinion, the he goes from Kalashnikov to Jim Fuller, and Jim Fuller and Sons Liberty were in talks about partnering up and him running the AK side of things, giving him, like, basically his own autonomy to do whatever the hell he wants, you know, out of here, and really supporting that. What ended up happening is, this was around the time when the gun rush was starting to really kick off, and our capacity to produce was so strained and so limited, it had been irresponsible for all parties involved to try to launch a completely separate trajectory. Like, I think the AK launch would have suffered because of how strained Sons Liberty was, and then Sons Liberty would have suffered if we would have, like, you know, put the necessary resources into the AK launch. And so it never happened, and he went off, and he's kicking ass right now on Fuller Phoenix. I mean, he's, like, everything worked out the way it was supposed to. He's over there killing it right now. Jim's still a very good friend, and I have a lot of respect for that guy. But yeah, it almost happened. Short of that, man, I don't see a Sons Liberty AK. We're pretty good at what we do. Like, we're really good at the M4 platform. And when you deviate from that, whenever you start, like, kind of getting into the stuff, that I'll never be Jim Fuller. And why the hell would I want to compete with Jim Fuller whenever, like, that guy exists, you know? If he ever wants to come back and maybe do a special project together, that would be fucking rad. I'd be down in a second.
I agree. All right, I'm going to read this next question. This is one of the crazier ones.
Okay.
Is there a specific way to effectively bridge the gap between all forms of the gun industry, which I think is the question, which continues on, there are sects that are jerking off their rifles, other sects jerking each other off to how not-for-profit organizations spend their money, other sects jerking themselves off in the woods, etc. Wouldn't all of our fights against the G-men be more effective if we were all on the same page?
So this guy wants us to all jack off on a page together.
The fight would be more effective if we weren't jacking off so much, probably. He wastes a lot of time.
So wait, but I'm saying, are we going to jerk off at the same time?
I think so. We should develop Sons of Liberty lotion.
Hey, look, man, if it'll help the cause, you can count me in. Anything for the cause.
We made the table high on purpose.
Yeah, so, yes, the serious answer to your question is, is yes, there's really no solidarity. This is why I say there's no gun community. There's a gun culture, there's no community. And there's really no solidarity. I'll tell you what, like, God forbid if, like, Marty Daniel from Daniel Defense was, you know, really facing some serious lawsuits, and for some reason they needed a defense fund, I would empty out my bank account to go and contribute to Marty's defense fund, even though we're competitors, right? It was, I do believe that if, like, one of us falls, it's fucking dominoes.
Yeah.
So I believe that there should be more solidarity. I'm proud that we have really good relationships with a lot of our competitors. I mean, Ash Hess from over at Knights, we do stuff. I mean, Josh from Psionics is a very good friend of ours.
Roger
Wang, Monty up at Centurion. I mean, you know, of course, a lot of the suppressor companies and other parts companies, lights and optics, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm happy that I've made some lifelong friends, even with my competitors, right? But as far as, like, solidarity and an us versus them kind of thing, them being Google or Facebook or Michael Bloomberg or all that, there's really not. And unfortunately, there is infighting amongst some of the Second Amendment advocacy groups, because they're all vying for, you know, sometimes, I mean, I guess it's the pride of winning, right? But I mean, we support all of them. We support GOA, we support FPC, we support
the 2AF,
Second Amendment Foundation. And believe it or not, this may piss some people off, but I'm not a super big fan of the leadership of the NRA. I think they seriously need some rebranding. But I do recognize that the reason why the NRA is scapegoated the hardest by the fucking David Hogs of the world is because the NRA is still the most effective lobbying group that gun owners actually have when it comes to behind closed doors, talking a senator down from making a terrible vote after some high profile incident has happened in his state. It's still the NRA that's usually, like, behind closed doors, talking that dude down, reminding him that his constituents vote. So I see a lot of open hatred for the NRA, and some of it they clearly deserve. But if we're talking in terms of accuracy, I mean, each one of these groups does something. Like, GOA, I think, is one of the best at grassroots organizing and, like, getting out the word on the grassroots side. FPC and Second Amendment Foundation, those guys, I mean, when it comes to litigation and, like, launching, like, lawsuit after lawsuit that have been highly effective, I mean, those guys are very, very strong. Todd Rathner over at NFA, Freedom Alliance, man. Yeah. You know, he's done, I mean, he got a bill passed for me in Texas. So we try to support as many of those guys as we can. But yeah, I wish there was some more solidarity. Thank you, Lamb 13 Ear. Recently purchased SOLGW. Shout out to 2A Zone Upland, California. Woohoo! Behind enemy lines, baby. How do you guys feel about California's 2A firearms community? Despite how California is ran, lean towards, there's this huge presence of citizens in LEO who are enthusiasts. Love your products, vision, and contribution. I am thankful to a few LAPD SWAT guys who introduced me to your tools. You have a life, you have a lifer. This is Marsteezy. Guys, we developed, or I shouldn't even say developed, but we started making the California compliant gun because it was the easiest way to get a gun into California. It required the least amount of mechanical fuckery to get the gun in there. I have a lot of, so the first rifles I ever built when I was still building out guns out of my garage before the ATF came and, like, shut me down, were for Marines and SEALs, Marines and team guys. They all lived out of San Diego because that's where my friends were, and they introduced me to these guys. Like, I remember whenever California was a lot less restrictive. And so, as a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, I think California might actually have a higher number of gun owners
than
Texas. So, no, we try our best to support. There's a lot of gun companies that will not ship anything to a California address. They won't ship a bolt carrier group. They won't ship a stock. There's companies that will not ship to Cali addresses. We don't do that. We will ship every damn thing that your FFL will allow us to. And if it's, you know, if it's not explicitly restricted, we'll ship that shit to your door. Whenever the magazine moratorium happened, we stopped everything we were doing because, like, California could get standard capacity mags for, like, a day or two, and the whole entire shop. I mean, like, you know, the lady that sweeps up in the back, she was helping
packing magazines.
She was helping packing mags to get that shit into California. I will say something. This disappointed me quite a bit about California. several years ago before the gunpocalypse, I invested my own money, not the company's money, but my own money on helping a petition get circulated in California. And if we would have gotten like 330,000 signatures, we could have gotten something on the ballot, you know, for a vote. And out of, I think, 11 million gun owners or 13 million gun owners, we could not get 330,000 signatures. And we had these things at every gun shop, gun store, shooting range. And we'd talk to people walking out, and a lot of guys did not sign. I was very disappointed with some of the apathy from the gun owners that at least I encountered. But I want to give a shout out to Cal Guns, and some of the guys that the advocacy groups there. I know they do a lot of work. Y'all are certainly in for a uphill battle. Hopefully, Bruin gives you the tools to do some damage.
I'll read the next one. All right. What's the inspiration between the scalper and soul snatcher lowers and the safety selector markings? And I was going to say, man, I remember sitting at the bar with the former owner of Zero Foxtrot talking about the soul snatcher lower. And we're talking about, you know, his time in the Marine Corps. And we're like, oh, what are we going to do for the selector markings? And, you know, we're talking about the one fuck, you know, zero smoke fuck. Break. The smoke break was the one that always stood out. Because we're like, well, what do you do when you're done killing? Well, you take a smoke break.
Yeah. So Guido, a good friend of ours, he was the guy that founded Zulu Foxtrot. Marine, hilarious sense of humor, very dark humor, grunt humor. And he was also a gigantic military historian. He loved, you know, military history, specifically Marine Corps history. And, The soul snatcher lower is actually inspired from like the Vietnam era death cart. And it was a lot from like the Vietnam era grunts and that kind of like humor. And that's where it came from. A lot of people have asked us to stop making that, and we never will. Matter of fact, we had police agencies that wanted to cancel contracts because we offered that lower, and we're like, tough shit. Like, you know, this is part of our culture, and this is something that we do with our friend. And so, again, this goes back to, you know, us kind of sticking to what we do. So just like the guy that asked us to, you know, maybe not sell guns to law enforcement. Well, I don't take my cues from an angry guy on the internet. So
yeah, I was dating a girl one time and she hated it. She was just not a fan. Like, no, that was the end of that.
So the scalper was actually a project we did with my buddy Wes Whitlock. Wes Whitlock owns Rug American Apparel and Invader Coffee. Wes was one of the first guys to really believe in us. And when we first started launching the company, he was shouting us out, and like, he actually helped us get like our first 10,000 followers or something. And he did a lot of cool stuff. And Wes's client, you know, Wes was a Marine also. He, you know, then after that, he was like working for the State Department and did some executive protection work. But his culture, his community, the guys that, you know, that were buying his products were also from like the special operations community. And, you know, that logo was represented on several different unit patches. And so there was variations of that thing on several different unit patches that, if you know, you know. And so, you know, Wes wanted to do this. I was completely on board, and it's kind of an ode to that culture and that spirit of, Americans have our, you know, Americans have some pretty tough fighters too. So,
yeah. If y'all look too, the other logo that came from Wes is actually the Lone Star. Is our Texas logo came from Wes as well.
Yeah. That was from Mechanical Surgeon. So, who do you feel has made the biggest, most positive difference in the Second Amendment community in the last few years? Particularly, how did the summer of mostly peaceful protest affect American view? This is a great question. Tom Mitchum. So, I already know I'm gonna get destroyed. I'm gonna anger some people, but I was Dan Crenshaw asked me to come onto his podcast maybe a while back. This was whenever I was really beating the street and advocating for about the pistol brace issue, and I was gonna go talk to anybody who would potentially listen, anybody who would potentially give me a microphone and talk about this pistol brace issue. I would win. But one of the things I had said on there was nobody has inspired more people to embrace the idea of self-defense than like your hardcore, like very far left people. The defund the police thing, where like we're, you know, so if, you know, the riots, the unrest, the looting, the burning the towns, the lockdowns, the, you know, not just that, but whenever you started seeing what felt like a lot of government overreach for during the COVID stuff, I think people started waking up a little bit to like something's not right here. And gun ownership went through the roof from people who have historically never really owned guns. That, in my opinion, has been probably one of the biggest changes in the Second Amendment movement, was that when you turn on the news and your fucking city's on fire, you're not going to be the only guy on your cul-de-sac without a gun. I sold guns to people who had opposed me at like debates and town halls and stuff, and nobody asked me for the gun that held the least amount of bullets. When it was time to protect their fucking toilet paper roll, they wanted the gun with the most amount of bullets. And again, that I think has had the hugest demographic shifts that I've seen in my adult life from paying attention to guns. The other thing that made a huge difference, I think, was Bruin. Bruin, as far as litigation, is ginormously significant. It's not just about carrying arms. It's also about defining arms in a historical context. I'm not going to get into all of that, but research it. That was a huge deal. Kyle, what do you think?
No, I agree, man. That's something you hit a nail on the head, because there's a lot of people that just sit at home and, you know, I do it on certain issues. There's issues I care about, but I'm not going to get militant about it, you know, because it's just not, I don't wake up in the morning and be like, oh, you know, like gas stoves, you know, whatever. But I would hate if they took gas stoves. I love to cook, by the way, but I'm not going to go like, you know, pick it on that shit. Either way, you know, like Mike said, like, you know, your town being on fire, you know, us having to pull watch here at the shop because there's riots downtown, that wakes people up, you know, like they're not, you wake up and you think about it. You're like, man, I need to go do something. I need to donate money to FPC or 2AF or somebody to go out and fight the battle for me at least. Or at better yet, you know, a couple of years ago when they had the march, whatever you want to call it, in Virginia, you know, Mike was a day late to shot because he went out there and talked. And
that was amazing, dude. That was an amazing experience.
Well, I mean, them trying to change the law just in Virginia there woke a lot of people up that woke up that day, traveled from all over the United States to show up and fight. And maybe fight's the wrong word, you know.
No, but voice their opinion. Yeah. I mean, there was 50,000 armed people in a crowd, and, you know, there was absolutely no violence. People picked up their own trash. And by the way, there was only one arrest made, and I saw it. There was only one person arrested out of those 50,000 people. And do you know what that person was arrested for? It was like an Antifa girl, and she had a mask on. And the city ordinance would not allow you to wear a mask like that in public. And they arrested her for wearing a mask. Now, you know, fast forward like a year or two later, and they probably would have put you against the wall and shot you for not wearing a mask. But hey, fuck you. So, all right. Let's see here. Would be interesting to hear your individual favorite rifle specs and optics and why. You want to go for that? It's West Love, by the way.
Yeah, I mean... we make so many different models of guns. I think that's one big thing about us, is we make huge variation of calibers and barrel lengths and rails and a bunch of other different stuff. If I had to pick a favorite, man, one of my newest ones that I built was a 13.7 with the M89. I've got a Voodoo, EOTech Voodoo 1-10 on there. I've got a Sandman can on there. And I've got the Rogers Forward Controls LRF Ambi Lower on there. And it's just a great, very maneuverable gun. You know, I don't have to worry about NFA crap. 13.7 pin and weld to the nox, and you just can't go wrong with something like that. So it's a great all around rifle for anything you need it for.
Yeah, I mean, so for the majority, like I said, from the last several years, the rifle that's by my nightstand, you know, like the rifle that I would, you know, I use for home defense, has been a 12.5, and it's had a dead air Sandman on there. I changed it to a K. It did have the S. I have an aim point on there, and I have a mod light. So like that's my home defense gun. But there's a rifle, like, you know, we've had a lot of guys do cool signature guns. I think I might put together a rifle that the Mike's gun, and then you'll get to see what I've like what I've settled on here, again, you know, I'm looking at it more for like the like home defense kind of stuff. 13.7, that was a brainchild of Kyle and I, and that has been our most popular gun overall, is the 13.7 paired with that Nox. It makes a lot of sense for a lot of reasons. Man, it's hard to say. I'll tell you what, though, as far as non-ARs, I'm a giant Winchester lever-action rifle collector, and so as far as my favorite guns that are not like Sons of Liberty guns, any of the older Winchester lever guns, I have a kind of an obsessive collection with those.
Dude, yeah, outside of guns lately, I've been doing World War II guns. You know, I've bought been all of them. You know, I bought a M1 Garand. You know, I've had an O3 for forever. Bought a Enfield, one of the ones they imported that was dropped to the invasion of Normandy. Bought a 98K, actually bought a 1911 that was a Union Switch and Signal, probably the most expensive single gun I own, from a buddy of mine that was all original.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, just...
Oh, that's right, I saw that.
Yeah. It's a great little, you know, his terrible thing is he was going to go to a dealer here in town, not going to mention names, and they're like, I'll give you like $1,500 for it. He sent me pictures of it, and I'm like, oh, let me, you know, take it apart, let me see the barrel, make sure it's all original. I was like, dude, that gun's worth like, I didn't pay this much for it, but I was like, this gun's worth like $6,000. I was like, they're trying to fuck you. Bring it over here. We'll take care of it.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. Yeah. Well, I think that was solid. I think you got a good deal and you saved his ass a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I got a good deal. We both got a good deal and we saved him. And I'm, you know, maybe they didn't know what they were looking at. I don't know. But yeah, they were definitely trying to pull an over on him.
When do I get to come down there and tattoo you guys? Brandon Cutter. Hey, dude, I need some new ink. Like, I really do. So if you want to come down here and, as long as you tattoo a dick on my forehead or something, like, yeah, I could use some new ink, man.
I don't think you've gotten any since we've had Sons of Liberty.
I haven't got a tattoo in many years, but I need some.
I know some of y'all are going to hate this, but I have no tattoos, so we're not going to start now.
Well, we're like the yin and yang, so it kind of works out. It's okay.
I respect everybody that gets them, and I appreciate them, but not for me. There's
Mike Maholsky. What do you think is the best way to bridge the disparity between the culture in this country with folks that are anti-gun? I hate saying that, by the way. And the 2A community as a whole, how do we get the 2A community to stop infighting about stupid shit and focus on what's important for building this community instead of tearing it all down? Chosan Consulting. It's hilarious that a lot of the questions that we get asked identify the same exact problem, and that is like this really kind of toxic nature of like the gun culture. And trust me, we see it. I mean, you're a fan of X brand, so fuck you, or hey, you know, I'm in the snobs group and we're gonna, you know, like so there's a ton of toxicity in this thing. And I think it has to do with the very nature of gun owners, and it's not a problem. I just don't know how you fix it, right? The issue is that we are all fairly individualistic. We're not groupthink kind of people. And so when you have that type of personality, that you bring them into it, that's why I say it's not a community, it's a culture. So I don't know how to fix that. Perhaps if there was ever, some kind of real type of force scenario with gun confiscation or something, maybe if it came down to something horribly drastic, maybe there would be some solidarity. But again, I still think that the 5% difference between you and your gun loving neighbor might be enough to be a real problem. I don't know. I don't know. It's kind of a scary thought.
Yeah. I think the best thing everybody can do is, you know, what we try to do is set the example, you know, be cool with everyone and just don't be an asshole.
So as far as the disparity between like the anti-gunners, again, I try to engage people. I don't have any, I used to think that, you know, you could potentially, you know, win some folks over. I realize now that, and this goes across the board, whether you feel about certain medicines or certain social practices or whatever that is, people have a really hard time changing their mind. If anything, they double down more. And it doesn't matter what kind of empirical data that you present. For some reason, people just dig deeper and deeper. The one thing that's going to change, I hope, and this is I'm optimistic, the one thing that might actually change and bridge the gap, not just for the gun situation, but just our country in general, is if we keep seeing the weakening of legacy media and you see the rise of more alternative stuff, podcasts, things of that nature. I'm hoping that like certain free speech driven platforms allow real conversations, less censorship, and that might help dig us out of some of those trenches, you know, more honest, objective reporting. Like that's going to be what bridges the divide is. It's an informational war. And until someone can get ahead of the divide and conquer thing that's going on right now, you know, hopefully, you know, Elon saves us all. So, okay. Do you support the Libertarian Party? And do you think it is possible for a Libertarian candidate to win the presidency?
You can totally handle that one.
Yeah, this is Bounty Hunter Guide NC. I mean, there are parts of me that would consider myself more of a Libertarian than any other political party to some degree, Although I typically vote right? I typically vote for the right. One of the most frustrating things that I saw within my friends in the Libertarian, this is with my own good friends in the Libertarian Party, and we're sitting around a campfire debating shit. There was what I thought to be a bit of a distortion to the Libertarian Party, in that when you look at like, remember these conversations were 2 years ago. These conversations happened before we know what we know today. In the Libertarian Party, people would say that it is Facebook's First Amendment right to censor whoever they want. It was Twitter's First Amendment right to censor whoever the fuck they want. And that we should not be upset that Twitter and these privately owned platforms had that much control over speech. Okay. Well, I disagree with that. I thought that was a distortion of libertarian ideology, because to me, that sounds a hell of a lot more like oligarchy whenever you have, you know, very big, powerful entities controlling the speech of, you know, millions. That didn't sound like a libertarian victory to me. But now we fast forward a couple of years, and we know that the DOJ and the FBI and the certain political campaigns were actually working in conjunction with these companies. And, you know, Mark Zuckerberg was on the Rogan show and straight up said, yeah, the FBI came to him and said, don't publish this story, or, hey, you know, mute and suppress this story. This is open source now, right? Like a lot of my libertarian friends who defended those practices, I hope have come around to the idea that like, no, that really was a violation of the First Amendment, because it was being directed by the government through a corporate proxy. And if you're trying to circumvent the Constitution by way of commerce, that's not a libertarian victory. So that was my one issue, although I kind of lean more to the libertarian side. Things about like decriminalizing certain drugs, I believe in that kind of stuff. As far as, I have a hard time cheering for a guy being in a cage for some pot. You know, I mean, I think most Americans would agree with that. That like, if you spend 10 years in the cage over a fucking joint, that I don't believe was the founder's intent. Okay, Bounty Hunter Guide.
Well, we can go on guided bounty hunts. That sounds like fun.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Yeah, listen, hit me up. I'd love to help.
We'll totally pay for that.
Kyle Grothy's Mike Mahalski. If you could go back in time with the wisdom and knowledge you have now, what would you tell your 20 or 30 year old self? It's a great question, dude. Go ahead.
All right. Yeah. So, you know, I'm typically one of those, if we want to get heavy, man, one of those people that like everything happens for a reason. You know, I might be divorced, but I got two great kids out of it. You know, like everything happens for a reason. But would I go back and tell myself to do a few things differently? Yeah, definitely. I think one of them would be, man, I would tell myself to put the time into taking better care of myself. You know, I'm about to turn 40. It's like, whoever wrote this question, like, I think we both look old, like 30 years. Like, that wasn't that long ago. I'm only 39. Like, I turned 40 in a month.
Yeah, I'm 43. I turned 43.
How old do you think we are?
2 days ago. Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, I would work out more, you know, probably take a little bit better care of myself. I'm trying to do that now. And I tell you what, it's the older you get, the harder it is. And, you know, this is the first drink I've actually had in about 2 weeks. I've decided to mostly take the month off. You know, we're not gonna tell the girlfriend we're both taking the month off, but you know, we're shooting a podcast. I gotta have a drink, so
yeah.
And you know, is there little things that would change? Yeah, but you know, it's like that butterfly effect. It's like you change like one little thing, and like me and Mike aren't sitting here. You know, like yeah. Sons of Liberty doesn't exist. You know,
yeah.
I was gonna say some other horrible shit, but I'll keep it to myself. You know,
yeah. I think I don't think I could be here today unless everything kind of happened almost exactly the way that it did. I mean, a lot of my ability to deal with people from all spectrums of life and stuff had a lot to do with my path on how I got here. You know, like being a gambler, being a sky, like my comfortability with risk had a lot to do with my, you know, drive, I think, for entrepreneurship. My problem with authority, you know, made me an entrepreneur, right? Because I didn't want to answer to a boss. And I still have a problem with authority because, you know, that's how I take on a lot of my activism and lobbying stuff. You know, I've shifted my problem, you know, my problems with authority from one thing to something I think that's a little bit more productive and meaningful. So honestly, man, I kind of, now, as far as what I wish I knew, I wish I would have learned more about like the time value of money. I wish I would have learned and been more cognizant of things like credit and savings. And I wish I would have bought property sooner. I mean, I wish I would have bought a home much earlier in life. I mean, I was like a nomad traveling around all over the country, just kind of partying and fucking around. And I wish I would have made a few different financial decisions earlier in life. The sooner you start, I'll tell you this, for anybody out there that the young guys that listen to us, buy a fucking house. I don't care if it's a shack, buy a house as soon as you possibly can. And that is going to facilitate, that's going to open a lot of doors down the line for, you know, you're gonna have equity in that thing. It's going to appreciate, you're going to be able to sell it and sink that money tax-free into your next property and so on and so forth.
Even if it's a financial struggle for you to buy a house, definitely do it. I made a ton of money to sell in the last house I had that I'd bought in my 20s, and it's important. Definitely do that. Definitely try to save for retirement, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I spent like all my money on, you know, booze and women, and the rest I just wasted. So,
all right, next one. When can we expect Purple Anno? I know our inside guy's pushing it, from Brandon Smedley. First of all, I'd say probably go talk to that guy who likes to jerk off in the woods. No, I was kidding. Probably never. I don't even know anybody that does Purple Anno. I'm pretty sure that gets done in China, but.
I'll tell you what, dude, the Anno that we do is actually one of the things that kind of makes the look of our rifle pretty unique. It's that bright dip Anno. It's extremely fucking hard to do. There's only like two anodizing houses in the country that do it, and we kind of pigeonholed ourselves. We could have grown the company faster if it wasn't being limited to like this really specific kind of anode that we chose. So, we're not gonna deviate from that for anytime soon.
Maybe if we get Barney the dinosaur as a pro staffer.
Yeah. So, does Blaster Kloss appear year round or only during the holidays? Look forward to hearing y'all talk around the table. John Macias. Blaster Kloss is year round, man. When we see somebody that deserves a good rifle, that's the gift that keeps on giving, man. Like, you know, we have given rifles to people who are remarkable Americans, you know, everything from like celebrities that are champions of speech, or, you know, people that have, you know, taken our fight, you know, for Second Amendment issues, you know, and amplified them. People who have stopped mass shootings, people who have defended their own families, like heroes of all kinds, you know, people that I think have done something remarkably American. And we give, so Blaster Kloss comes out anytime he needs to.
He's always ready.
Blaster Kloss is always ready. And there's a, the fucking elves are always cobbling.
What would you do as head of the ATF? I mean, besides abolish it, of course. If y'all are, you know.
What regulations for manufacturing companies would you set?
What do you think of the Army's new caliber? What would you make if you were building the next battle rifle for the military? And what would it take to repeal the NFA, from Mike Fors?
Mike Fors, man, what's up, dude? Well, if I was the head of the ATF, I would go into the basement and then set it on fire. No, that's a joke. That's a joke.
We'd hit the fire alarm first.
Yeah. That's a joke. So, interestingly enough, whenever they were trying to, who was that? that guy that they tried to get appointed, Biden tried to get appointed. What was his name?
Oh, the guy from Chapman. Waco? Yeah. What the fuck?
Was it Chapman, right? So we're gonna look at this.
I can see his stupid David face. Chapman. Yeah, I can see his stupid face, but I can remember his name.
David Chapman, right? Let's see.
Oh, that's the wrong one. Pretty sure that's murder.
Yeah, is it? Yeah, David Chipman.
Chipman.
All right. Well, yeah, he's a, well, David Chipman's a real fucker too. Anyways, one of the arguments that I was having publicly about this, David Chipman is the head of a the Giffords Group. He's an anti-gun organization. And if you're gonna appoint an activist to a role that's supposed to be a regulatory role that's cooperative with the industry, then prepare yourself for, you know, if they decide to elect fucking or appoint Wayne LaPierre. Like, both of those ideas would probably be bad, because then you'd have like these really vicious swings every 4 years or every 8 years. And it would be very volatile. The ATF, in my opinion, has, I think, moved away from whatever their original mission was, which was actually tax collecting on booze. That was the actual. And if you go to their website, they trace their origins to the whiskey rebellion under George Washington.
What's that movie with oh man, that old movie about the prohibition. That's a great movie. That's what I keep thinking of. That what are they really called? Like revenue agents, whatever they're called.
Right. So, but that's where they trace their origins to, like the 1700s and the whiskey rebellion, and you know there were tax collectors for. For booze. But I look at the ATF and I see, like, you know, Waco and Ruby Ridge and things of that nature. I think that it's harmful. I think it's harmful. I mean, anyways, that's a whole other podcast in and of itself. But what regulations for manufacturing companies would I set? Well, honestly, when a gun company gets sued for negligence, I don't have a fucking problem with that. You know, a buddy of mine, remember Mark McCluskey?
Yeah.
Mark McCluskey was the guy that stood out on his lawn in St. Louis when the mob came to his house, and him and his wife were out there, and he had like that that A2, the M16A2.
Oh, dude, old school, like his Vietnam.
Yeah, he was in that yard. Pink shirt. So I actually became pretty close friends with Mark McCluskey. We gifted him a rifle, and him and I took a road trip to the border whenever he was running for he was running for Senate in out of Missouri. Him and I and his wife actually spent 3 days on the road together, like touring the Texas border and seeing them. Anyways, long story short, he successfully sued a company called Bryco Jennings, and they made these like Saturday night special pistols that whenever you would drop the slide, the gun would just run away in full auto.
Holy shit.
And so in now, if a gun company, if there was a way to regulate a gun company, I would say, like, you know, the regulations would be making it drop safe, you know, making the safety work, you know, like being, you know, being held accountable for some kind of a, you know, manufacturing defect that, you know, puts other gun owners, you know, in peril. So if you build a giant piece of shit that blows up and, like, you know, like blows your fucking customer's hand off, like, yeah, that sounds like a reasonable regulation. Lethal our weapons have to get. And so if we want to push a bullet fast enough or heavy enough to punch through fucking Ivan's helmet, you know, then we need to get some pretty high pressure shit cooking. And if you're going to push something, a projectile of adequate mass, adequate density, and, you know, bullet construction to a specific velocity to achieve that goal, you're going to have to make a materials leap. The gun industry is about 30 years behind most material sciences, right? I mean, if you look at a prosthetic limb and the materials that go into that, and you look at like a rifle, you know, one of them is far more technologically advanced than the other. Well, you can also charge $25,000 for a prosthetic limb, but, you know, not a lot of people want to buy a $25,000 rifle. If you gave me an unlimited budget, I will build you a gun that fucking, you know, that can shoot through anything indefinitely, and it's going to cost you, you know, $50 a bullet. So realistically, if you need a package that does some of that stuff and to bring it down into a reasonable cost, I think enhancing bolts, I think better barrel material, you know, looking at some different stuff that can increase lethality of the platform to survive higher pressure ammo, and that higher pressure ammo being more, having better terminal performance on target, especially like, you know, armor. So we'll, I don't know what that caliber looks like yet, but I bet you it's coming.
All right, it's next question. Will you guys ever go back to offering custom-ish guns rather than just production guns again in the future, from our buddy Hank Trevino? And I think the answer is the plan is yes, to do that here in the future. You know, something we really couldn't do during the rush because we were balls to the wall 7 days a week trying to crank out as much stuff as we could. We are in the process of building a brand new website that'll launch here possibly by the time this podcast airs or very soon afterwards. And next step, hopefully, you know, a few weeks down, you know, weeks or months down the road from that, is starting to dip our toe back in the water of doing more custom guns. I mean, it takes a lot of, you know, a lot of y'all don't know, back in the day when we do these custom guns, you know, the parts may not have been in stock. I mean, this was years ago, and that almost got us into trouble. That gets other manufacturers in trouble where, yeah, I'm going to take an order for this crazy ass gun and this crazy ass color and all this stuff, but you got to go source the parts to build it. If we start doing it in the future, I think it'll be a little more controlled. It'll be our normal parts, but, you know, can you get custom Cerakote? Can you get a custom trigger? You know, a little bit different charging handle, you know, that sort of stuff in the pool of parts we already use and we manufacture. That's something we definitely want to do, and use parts that we have in stock so we can crank them out in a reasonable amount of time.
Our original business model, we were like the Build-A-Bear of M4s, right? So that customers could come in and like walk through the line and like pick this trigger, this muzzle device, this grip, this stock, this, you know, whatever. And then, you know, me or Dylan would build it for you on the spot while you wait. You'd sit there and probably drink a beer while we're building your gun, and we would shoot the shit. That, I'm not gonna lie, that was probably the most fun years of my life. My fantasy, you know, if and when we build our new facility, when we do this, it'd be kind of fun to hold on to this old facility and then have almost two separate operations. One that's like a
production. It'd be the Build-A-Bear building.
Yeah. So one of them is like strictly the production side, where we're shipping pallets and pallets of guns to, you know, our big distributors and, you know, the commercial side of things and our standard production items. And it'd be neat to open the Build-A-Bear back up, man, because that, it was so fun. And honestly, man, like that's how we made a lot of, we have lifelong friends from that time. I mean,
like, it'd be great, like, get a gun with like one of those voice boxes on it, where you pull the string like Build-A-Bear, like, fuck you, David Shipman, Mike Mahals, Mike McSpeechy.
Oh man, Hank Trevino, good to hear from you, man. For taking those more precise shots, do you prefer slung versus prone, with or without a bipod, Chris Goldsmith? I think it depends on all. I think it depends on a lot of stuff.
Doesn't matter when you're shooting an AK, Chris.
Yeah, Chris, there's a precise shot with an AK.
I personally, I mean, I used to remember when I originally learned to shoot, it was like, you know, wrapping up with the sling, and like Chuck Pressburg still kind of teaches that, you know, when we go to do stuff with him. But personally, prone with the bipod's kind of how I like to do it if I can get down there, you know.
Yeah, if prone is an option, and it's a viable option to make your shot, then I prefer prone to.
We're working on coming out with the tripod. That's another good way to do it. So
yeah. Workarounds for the M76 inside rail diameter being too skinny, almost impossible to mount anything under the gas block. Other than that, best gun in the industry, hands down, Samuel Gallardo. Sam, well, that was actually part of the motivation for the M89. The M89 uses that larger extrusion specifically for the reason that you're talking about. Not only does it add rigidity, but it did add more real estate around the gas block. That is going to be one of the limitations of the M76, is if you need to mount something specifically around that gas block, it could get a little tight. Now, I have seen some people file down the mounting hardware for your M-lock, like the screws and stuff. Because there's really, you're not making a ton of contact there. You can modify that screw on your M-lock mounting hardware to where it doesn't make contact there. I don't ever really suggest people
Dremeling shit.
Dremeling or modifying factory anything. But I mean, there are some really good shooters I know that are pretty competent that have made a few adjustments to do that. Again, the M89, it fixes all of it. And you know, that's, I'm not saying you can go out and buy a new rail, but I mean, buy a new rail, but, I'm kidding. The M76 is awesome. I mean, a lot of people really do prefer that more slim feel, and it has a lot to do with how you grip. Like, I mean, the M76 is legit rail, then that lockup is very, very good.
Ask but the lady's girth is better.
But unfortunately, that gas block real estate issue is a thing. So
I think we covered the next question already. It's the, if Mike could only have one AR personally, what would the configuration be? Barrel length, red dot, or LVPO from Jedediah Lane? I think we hit that already a little bit.
You'll see pretty soon. You'll see exactly what that looks like very soon, sir. What drives innovation at SOHW? What possible advancement in the AR platform do you see in the next 5, 10 years? So I know we talked a little bit about this earlier. We're talking about increasing the lethality of the platform. So one of the things that drives innovation at SOHW is end-user feedback. Okay. So whenever we talk to specific end-users that have specific requirements, and you know, we can make some of these things happen to, you know, for better userability of stuff, we do that. So luckily for us, we have some really, really amazing people giving us good feedback. Because I understand the mechanical workings of the gun. I mean, I travel the country teaching an accredited school on how to make this gun work, with the mechanics, materials, all that stuff. But as far as like the field use stuff, luckily for us, we have guys with way more experience, and not just that, but like tactics and procedures, equipment changes, right? So, you know, the laser that somebody used a few years ago changed. It's different, it has different dimensions now. It has to mount differently to the gun. Or, hey, this new inline thermal came out. It has to be employed this way or that way. Or, hey, there's a new whatever the thing may be. You have to be evolving as the equipment evolves. So if you look at our L89 rail, that's a really good example of like the evolution of the brand for people who need that type of capability. Another thing that drives innovation too is, again, you know, if you look at, you know, certain ammo advancements and things of that nature, I mean, the next 5 to 10 years, well, I think ammo is going to get higher pressure and it's going to require material leaps. Luckily for us, where I think we're already ahead of the game in a lot of that area. I mean, we're about to release a new bolt like in the next couple of days that, you know, it solves all that problem. We have new barrels coming out. You know, some of this stuff might be overkill for normal use, but we're trying to preemptively get ahead of where stuff is going. The other thing, too, that's interesting, one of the cool things about Sons Liberty is there was a big trend for a while that people wanted guns with really tiny gas ports that required a suppressor to make the gun work. And what's funny is that if you look now, almost every suppressor company is starting to push towards flow through or low back pressure suppressors. Well, if you have a gun that requires a suppressor, that extra, suppressors mimic dwell time, that extra pressure to drive the gun, you're going to need a new barrel or you're going to run an old can. The way Sons Liberty has been gassing guns with wide operational envelopes, you can throw that new suppressor, the newest, most current badass suppressor on your gun, on a Sons gun, and it's going to run just fine. So that was us thinking forward years ago. And that's the result of what we come to today. So thank you, Matthew Moser. Good question, man. Retro rifles win. Dude, this is from Joe Falcon. I'm a hardcore AR history junkie. I love retro rifles.
He had old drawer full of old barrels and stuff for a while. I don't know where those went, but
there's some bum has them on fucking Czar Zamora.
When we moved shops, yeah, they disappeared. But yeah, he had a whole drawer full of
some
gold shop.
Using like my fucking 601 barrel to like cook his rat or something right now.
Probably a squirrel on this side of town, but yeah,
I had just so many original 601 parts that got lost. But
whoever wants a 601 full auto safety, I think we'll bag of those somewhere. We will do it, man. It's just one of those things where that's one of the things too that kind of fell through during the during the rush, and you know, getting a good carry handle up for these days is damn near impossible. It's something we've been looking at possibly manufacturing, and it's
we've been looking to manufacture carry handle uppers for their, you know, A1, A2. Thing is, in order to really do it right, because I want to do it out of the correct forged material, I want to actually have the correct forgings And that means we have to have the right tooling and fixturing to do all that. And, you know, I'd have to make like 10,000 of them, you know, in order to make the forging cost make sense. And then in order to, you know, all the tooling and other fixturing to do it right. And it's kind of a big gamble. I don't know if the, you know, if the market would handle, you know, 10,000 A1 uppers. You know, I don't know. I would love to try because I'm a junkie for that stuff. But, you know, right now we're still struggling to keep up with our current demand. I mean, that would be a giant trajectory leap that I don't know if we have the
capacity. Put Joe for down for 100 of them.
Yeah, Joe Fowl. Yeah, you commit to 100 right now, then I'll do it. All right. What evolutions do you foresee for the M4 AR-15 platform of weapons now that the Spear program has seemingly assumed the role of the next-gen weapon for the military? How much life is there remaining for the Stoner design in its current form of obsolescence? This is from Randy Mendoza. I'll be quite honest. I personally don't necessarily think the Spear rifle is going to be in service for, you know, the next 50 years or something like the Stoner gun, right? They made some cool material and mechanical leaps to push that heavier bullet very, very fast and have a 13-inch barrel. And I think that they did something great by achieving that level of ballistic performance, right? But I don't think the M4 is necessarily going away anytime soon. I think what you'll see is advancement in ammo technology, which will then drive materials leaps for bolts, barrels, springs, you know, stuff like that. You know, that will probably push the M4 a little bit further, down the road. As far as an entirely new platform adoption, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, from what I understand, like, yes, the SIG, the Spear, like, that gun is in service, and they are going to be issuing that gun quite a bit. It'll be interesting to see how overall it does over time. The caliber is very cool. I don't think the M4 is going to go away. And real quick, little history thing. Make sure I get this right. What caliber was the M1 Garand originally chambered in? It was like a 274 or something.
The Peterson, wasn't it?
Yeah, 274 Peterson, I think, right? So, trust me, I'm going somewhere with this.
As Peterson with a D.
Yeah.
Y'all can't see it off screen, but we're looking at a giant screen and Googling shit. So.
Yeah, hold on. Where are they? 276 Peterson. Yeah, so the M1 Garand, right, was originally chambered in something called 276 Peterson. The 8-shot clip that you guys see was actually a 10-shot clip, right? And, like, in order for John Garand to field that gun, you know, to the military, they had a chamber in 30-06. It took 2 rounds out of the clip. The only reason why I bring this up is that sometimes the logistical issue of what it would take to field a new weapon or a new caliber is the greater challenge than developing a new weapon or a new caliber. There are amazing calibers and rifles out there that might outperform certain other platforms, but can it be adopted? Like, would you have to change every mag pouch in the entire military? You know, would you have to change all the, you know, millions of support parts, the training, the tools, the fixturing, all the stuff they have there? I use the 276 Peterson as an example of, like, that was probably a superior cartridge ballistically, or as far as, like, you know, flight characteristics than the 30-06. 10 rounds was certainly better than 8, but they ended up with an 8-round 30-06 because the military was not going to just throw away billions of rounds of 30-06 ammo, and they weren't going to re-barrel every 1919 and shit in inventory, right, to accept that. So when you see, when you hear talks about adopting this or adopting that, it's a lot longer process than people probably think for all of the logistical reasons behind it. Anyway, it's a cool little history story.
All right, so I'll hit the next one. Who will be the OEM for the new Cold Hammer Forge barrels, and what profile will they be? Sons of Liberty, those are our barrels. We're controlling the whole process from blanks out. And what y'all are going to see over the next few months is we are redoing our entire barrel lineup. You're going to see all our combat barrels here very soon changing over to what we call the V2 profile. So you'll see, we'll put an image up on the screen while I'm talking, like, over my head right here. But You're going to see the combat barrels in those. You're going to see the Cold Hammer Forge barrels coming out in those in very short order. We'll also be rebranding, I guess, our match barrels. We've done marksman and match barrels over the last few years. They're all going to be going to be called precision barrels, and those are either going to be the V2 profile or an SBR profile. 416 barrels, but we're completely revamping them with polygonal rifling, with the black oxide coating the outside, and we've already got a lot of the 16 SBR barrels out in the world, and they're crushing it. You know, we're seeing 0.3, 0.4 MOA groups out of these things, and they're out there across the board.
I mean, everyone who's shooting it right now, not just that, it's not just the accuracy, but the shootability. We gassed that thing pretty conservative. It's got a 0.072 port, and whenever you pair that with the correct buffer and spring combo, I'd go a little bit lighter than our normal fighting guns. That thing feels like a pellet gun. It is extremely shootable, very, very fast. And, you know, my own evolution as a gun maker, you know, I reliability up, the fucking thing must work, or reliability above all else. And you've got to start looking into shootability and things of that nature. And, that's how the weapon just keeps getting better and better and better.
Yeah. You're going to see a lot of that. You're going to, a new emphasis on accuracy and shootability. You're going to see all our Mark 10 barrels change over to stainless. We're going to phase out all the chromoly vanadium for the time being.
Our warranty stays the same. If you shoot one out, yep, we'll replace it. But, you know, we're going to start driving everything, you know, at least the Mark 10s, you know, into more of like a precision role, even if you use it as a battle rifle. As far as who's the OEM for that, well, I mean, we handpick and select blanks, and then we tell them where they get chambered, and then we say where they get, you know. So, you know, we're going to, like, some of this stuff, we're going to start keeping a little bit closer to our vest. Some of the stuff we have NDAs in place, and some of it we can't talk about. But I think you'll like them, and they certainly fuck. Next question. Do you ever plan to sell suppressed-only barrel? And I know what you mean. Like, this is from John Bloomberg for, obviously less gas to the face. I'll be honest, the answer is no. I think every suppressor company moving towards low pressure and flow through type of technology, you're going to want a can that has a wider operational envelope. I think that a rifle should work suppressed or unsuppressed. If you do as much shooting and destructive testing, and if you were to service as many guns as we do, which is like at the industrial level in the tens of thousands, we see cans blow apart all the time. You see baffle strikes, you see jacket separations, you see guys running with fucking frange that blow shit up. You see all kinds of issues. Sims fuck some cans up, right? I mean, like, we see a lot of that stuff. And if this happens to your can, I don't want the entire weapon system going down because the can went down. So this would be kind of counter to our philosophy. Now, to be fair, I have personal guns that I have made that are suppressed only that require a suppressed gun. Like, if I were to go in here and make a gun for myself and I start with a tiny little gas port and I incrementally open it to where I want it, and then I'm looking at carrier speed and it works with my tuned can. If you do something like that for yourself, I'm okay with that. But when you start putting that out to the commercial market, or you start selling that stuff on the production side, it's very easy to get like a lot of people pissed off because they don't understand that. While you may be comfortable doing that with your own gun or tailor building something for yourself, I have no problem with that. But when a company starts doing it, you know, someone's going to buy that barrel not understanding what it is, and they're going to call me and be like, "Mike, you motherfucker." And this is how we avoid some of those phone calls.
Well, I think that's it for today. That's all our questions. Mike, you got any parting words for everybody?
No, this has been fun. We're going to be doing a lot more podcasts. I really enjoy this. It's been fun talking with you guys. Any questions that we failed to answer, or any questions that you want to stack on or follow up to anything we've talked about, feel free to leave in the comments. And guys, honestly, please like and share. Share it with your friends if you're in different groups. Get it out there. We'd like to build this up. I mean, this thing, yeah, we're a gun-centric company, but honestly, we're going to be talking about a lot of stuff that I think a lot of our friends have in common. So, yeah, man, share it around, give it a like, subscribe, and
we're on Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, iHeartRadio,
and Stripper. Oh, Stitcher. Stitcher. I was like, what is Stripper? like, I'm not going to do another podcast.
Sounds very 1A friendly, though.
Yeah, it's you Stitcher sound. Yeah, the fact I've never heard about it, I mean, it's probably the fucking Wild West.
I know. We're going to do a podcast with the stripper now. Yeah. Cinnamon Jr.
Guys, it's been fun, and I will see you next time.
Later.
Thanks for joining us today right here at the Liberty Tree Studio. But be sure to visit us at solgw.com for hard-use blasters, badass swag, and much, much more.